We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to episode 345 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and fresh off his visit to the Camp Nou from Barcelona, Eintracht Frankfurt, it's Barcelev. And I should mention, too, Barcelev is one of the two or three Kool-Aids that was at the Camp Nou today. I'm saying that in jest, but of course, we're going to kick it off with your feelings, your general reaction. But the first thing we have to start with, of course, Levan, is hello. And there was a lot of Eintracht Frankfurt supporters there.
Hey man, no, the first thing we're going to start with is my Estrella Damm.
Yeah, he deserves it.
Yeah, I got a couple of them. So you might have to edit a lot because, you know, I might revert to type and you're going to have my Twitter language instead of my Barcelona podcast language today. But what a show. I mean, this is just insane. This was just insane.
Are you referring to the supporters group or even the match itself? Or
no, not the match. Not the match. I'm proud of the team.
Good.
Yeah, I'm proud of the team. You know, I have no problem with any player on that pitch today. I have no problem with the coach. But like, we knew that there were a lot of Germans in town. We also knew that there would be a lot of Germans in the stadium. But I arrived, and I arrived like 5 minutes before the game because I left work at 8 o'clock. The game was at 9. I had to come by the house to drop off some stuff. And then I went straight to the stadium. My wife told me to be careful because there were like some disturbances. And there were a lot of riot police out with tear gas guns. But I didn't see any trouble, didn't come across any beef. But I went into the stadium. Everybody's wearing white shirts. Like I told the girl sitting next to me, Paula, I'm like, what is this? Parece el Bernabeu is what I told her. It looks like the effing Bernabeu. Like, it seemed as if maybe half the stadium, I know probably a bit less, but there are maybe 30,000 Frankfurt fans in there. And I told her right there and then, look, we already lost this match. We're not going to win. Impossible. Impossible. Sports is about momentum. And for an away team to have so much support in a huge stadium means that that momentum will go against us every time. There was no way we were going to win the match, even though I believed until the end that we could come back. But everything was stacked against us. So in the first half, they hardly did anything. They had a penalty from what people told me, because one of the people sitting next to me always listens to the radio report to get the commentary. So whenever there's like a dubious call, that person immediately tells me what people are saying on the radio because they get the replays and stuff. They said it was a dubious call. It was a 50-50. I don't know. But anyway, it went against us. Then I actually thought we played quite well the first half. We dominated. We created a couple of chances, especially earlier on. But then when in the 34th minute, they scored that second goal, which was just banger out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Momentum goes against you. And when they score and you have the whole stadium, your own stadium, supporting the other team, how are we going to blame? How are we going to blame players for being negatively affected? And it's not just the momentum that goes against us, but you know the energy and the belief that gives the Frankfurt team on the pitch? They were playing with 12 men, literally, because here, really, like, their fans were the 12th men.
Yeah, I got a few reactions to what you had to say, and again, bigger picture, bigger context. I, as I was watching that match, especially in the first half, I was wondering to myself, Dembele, I want to start with a positive here. He went out there like he had fire in his belly, and he had some fight. From minute one, even when he was switched over to the left side for that second half, he was defending in Barcelona's half. He was just going nuts. He was going right at guys. He was blowing past everybody. And I was thinking to myself, I wonder if that's because there's one player on the field for Barcelona tonight, other than Luke de Jong late on in the second half, who's been jeered and booed out of that stadium. And it's Ousmane Dembélé, as if the one player who's used to being booed at the Camp Nou or has been booed with ferocity at the Camp Nou before was prepared for that kind of atmosphere at home. As if he was the one guy who was in the right headspace to deal with that malarkey, if you want to call it that, going on at home. And, you know, the next thing I want to do is the big picture stuff, because I was definitely a little harsher, as I usually am. I'm a little harsher on the team for the five headlines. YouTube is a little more negative here than the level-headed people that listen to our podcast, which is really nice. So we're able to be a little more level-headed about the match itself. I think I have a few more problems with you in terms of just the tactics of it and the X and O's. Not so much about the belief, as you said, not so much about the fight, the desire, and all the things that were going against the players themselves, but by the opposition. So one of the questions for you, and you've come on the show and have really been a light to shed light, if we will, on the ticket buying process, season ticket holders, and how that exchange works. So I think the big question is, you know, Xavi said it in postgame, Laporta said it in postgame, we're going to have to look at this. So obviously, if they didn't have the immediate answer, I'm not expecting you to have the answer either. But for your understanding the last few days and the process in which you went about, you know, just being a part of this and being a part of that match, how do you think 30,000 Eintracht Frankfurt people got in it? Was it apathy? You know what I mean? For Kool-Aid, for socios? Is it just, again, apathy on a Thursday night in the Europa League? Is it that? Because to me, I think one of the through lines they might find is that while the team itself respected the Europa League, the Kool-Aids or socios on a Thursday night who were getting out of work didn't necessarily respect the Europa League. And that is what partially led to this. But I mean, 30,000 is a lot of tickets. That's a lot of people to not show up and Eintracht Frankfurt fans to sneak in instead. And not sneak in, but to get a ticket instead.
I mean, this happened because most of our fans are completely worthless.
So that they're going to hear the censor there. But so I'm going to put that up to apathy. You know, they're apoplectic about Barcelona where they're at now, right? That only, do you think that only a Champions League final or not a final, but only a Champions League semifinal or only the El Clasico or maybe even Sevilla, that's the only stakes that so many of these socios find? That if it's not one of those matches, then why am I going? I mean, that's what I expect. That's the expectation that Barcelona needs to be for me to show up.
Yeah, you have some people who only go to the Clasico or who only go to a couple of big matches a season. Like, it's, but you know, the problem is not, oh, they only go to the big games. The problem is that they are like, beep it out. People will understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We are a worthless fan base. We don't deserve to win this game. You do not deserve to win a game where this happens. You know, we deserve to lose it. The players don't deserve it. The club doesn't deserve it. We deserve it. The fans deserve it. Barcelona deserves it. Catalonia deserves it. And you ask the people who are in the stadium, because everybody on the stadium was upset about it. Like all, every socio, because I sit around other socios, every socio is upset about it. And the first thing they say, it's the fault of the club. To which I say that's nonsense. This is not the fault of the club. This does not happen in other countries, in other cities. Why doesn't it happen? Because their fans go to their games. That's why it doesn't happen. Did you see Eintracht Frankfurt last week? How, like, that stadium is completely full.
Yeah. I mean, is it the money?
Eintracht Frankfurt is not the biggest club in Germany.
Well, that's it. Is it just like, I mean, Man United, something like this happened at Man United a few years ago, I think, when they were, we'll say, like, in the Europa League or down in their own thing. I think they were or Tottenham, maybe the same thing before they changed stadiums. Did you think that once these teams, like Barcelona, have become such a major brand that, I mean, you have socios who are just, you know, there's money to be made more. So, I mean, and they're doing it on the back of this club that has become a global brand. And so there's so many people who are dying to go to the stadium. And so they're going to pay premium dollar. And no offense to the price of a ticket for Eintracht Frankfurt and the demand. But do you think it comes down to economics like that, supply and demand, that so many people want to come in, that socios are willing to kind of sell their soul, if you will, to make a buck as opposed to holding onto their ticket because that's what they truly want to do? Like, I'm not saying it's right, but I'm saying it's like, do you think that's the methodology that that has happened, because Barca have become the all-dominant force they've become in the last 15 years.
I think what happened in Manchester United is that you had a whole bunch of fans that broke away from the club when the Glazers took over. Like, they even have that, like, alternative Manchester United with a green logo and stuff like that. And they started, like, an amateur club somewhere. So I think that that situation is slightly different. Again, you go to England, and even their lower division clubs are sold out. You know, it's almost like a high school game in the States where everybody goes to support their high school team, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, it's interesting because the passion was so great that they had to fight against hooliganism for 20 years, right? And they thought that they would actually overcorrect and take out the actual supporters. But yeah, you're right. They've done just fine. That there's been, they were able to, I mean, fortunately, I mean, it took people dying, but they were able to curtail some of that, you know, bad behavior. And especially the Premier League money and the glitz and the glamour, the cameras and all that stuff certainly did change the atmospheres as well.
Or look at Atleti yesterday.
Yeah.
And their stadium filled, you know. I think part of it is the culture here, where, you know, I don't know how to say it without being insulting. So maybe I shouldn't say it.
Well, let's pivot. Like, I think the real losers of this match are those who gave away their ticket to 30,000 Frankfurt fans. I think Kool-Aid's agree. Like, this match hangs on them more than it hangs on Laporta and Xavi and the players. And, I mean, you want to give some credit to Eintracht Frankfurt for coming with a plan. But I want to do the positives here about the big picture. That as unfortunate as this result is, I mean, Barcelona were coming to this match on a 15-game unbeaten streak. That was sensational from start to finish. And, you know, another big picture is that the only thing truly lost here, other than the Europa League trophy, and that being pot one for next year's Champions League. But I quickly roll my eyes at that one, because can you tell me which pot each winner of the last five Champions Leagues was even in? One or two? Does it truly, truly matter what pot you're in? As long as you're the best team in Europe, or you get lucky for, you know, I'm looking at Real Madrid here, but as long as you can get lucky in five straight matches, right? Two quarterfinals, two semifinals, and a final, just a little bit of luck and enough skill and talent to win the Champions League, then you win the Champions League. It didn't matter if you were in pot one or pot two. So again, I don't think this takes away from what Xavi is starting to build. You know, I think there were glaring holes here. A Gerard Pique felt like a glaring hole, I thought, in this game. And I think that affected, obviously, Mingueza starting, who wasn't ready to start this match. Distribution to Pedri just wasn't happening. There were early reports, too, that Pedri's season might be done. Does he have some kind of long injury is what I'm seeing rumors about. Hopefully those are just rumors and he's okay or able to come back fit or whatever it is. But, I mean, I don't think his performance in the first 45 minutes showed that he was carrying some kind of knock, but I just think he wasn't getting the ball from Araujo as a right center back, or Mingueza, who just, again, he looked out of form. He looked out of his depth. He looked like he hadn't played in 2 months, because he hasn't played in 2 months. And then again, he basically could get the ball to Dembele, and then that's when Barcelona were in the business. But Pedri wasn't really affecting the game. And certainly, I'm actually not sure why it wasn't Frankie de Jong and Pedri to start the match, if anything, with Pedri working on the left as a left interior and Frankie de Jong as a right interior. But, you know, Xavi has his reasons for that.
Frankie was sick.
Yeah, then that's the easy answer. Then that's the reason. So that's unfortunate too, right? That Ansu wasn't prepared or hasn't been healthy enough this season at all and to be available. Then Pique was there. Because, no offense to Aubameyang, but Aubameyang's been trotted out for 60 to 70 minutes throughout this 15-game unbeaten streak, and he looks a bit tired the last three or four matches. Like, Aubameyang looks like he should have been rotated, just like the midfield was rotated, and he had his opportunities in this game, but he was a step slow to them. And so, Ansu, I think, up top looked like, and then Memphis Depay wasn't ready to start this match either. He was just coming back. Dest wasn't ready to start this match either. He had to come in the 60th in case wins extra time. So I think for the first time in a little bit, we really saw that depth for Xavi was tested, that even though Xavi has been able to, using four January transfers and some good young players and made improvements, help the squad out, even though they've taken huge steps forward, this team still has a summer transfer window with a few more, you know, free agents or some, you know, market splashes, if you will, to come over the summertime to fully push this team forward. We don't even know if next season is the season, but, you know, this certainly halts momentum, but it doesn't, because as a reminder, the goal was to finish top four. Like, and Barcelona are probably going to do that very, very easily. They're going to do it with, you know, it's going to feel like a month and a half to go in the season. So don't detract from that the fact that Lenglet was garbage against Levante, played himself out of the rotation again, and then Mingueza, who hadn't played in 2 months, was entrusted for what is a big European night. Which, again, is my only worry is that this is just another European night. And how are you and I again, for the upteenth time again this season, talking about another failure in Europe, which I think oversimplifies it. So that's not fair for me to create that narrative, but it's one of the ones that I leave with.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When you think of great duos, who do you think of? Jordan and Pippen or LeBron and Dwayne Wade? I mean, I talk about basketball a lot here on this podcast, but for the Barcelona version, there's Piqué and Puyol or Piqué and Mascherano, or the easy example of Xavi and Iniesta. And as you can hear from my voice, the perfect teammates aren't just professional athletes. It's cold season. I guess the flu and cold medicine, perfect teammates as well. But in this case, when it comes to growing your business, that's you and Shopify. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. To be honest, I've been doing this show long enough, and as I mentioned, it's cold and flu season. You hear it in my voice, especially during the holiday season. So whenever it comes to this business, anything that I can set up and kind of have working in the background that I know and can trust is just plugging along without my attention, those are the things that I really value at this point. So when my brain is foggy and all I can do is manage to turn on the microphone, talk to the guest, or just talk to myself and get out a piece of content, everything else, having that all automated or working in the background, that's been important to keeping me sane. And that's the thing about something like Shopify. What I do love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. So no matter how big or small, how good of a month or how bad of a month, things are just the same working in the background. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US, and Shopify is a global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs on every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tbpod, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/tbpod now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/tbpod.
I think fighting back to 2-3 changes it a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that too.
You know, so this is not a tie where we went in with a clear lead. No, the match was already difficult in Frankfurt, and there were very specific circumstances in tonight's match. If we had lost 3-0, or it could have gone 4-0, mm-hmm. then that would have been a huge problem for how the media react, how do players still want to renew, for example, because like you can get into a negative spiral there. Fighting back to 2-3 softens that somewhat. I thought Frankfurt were incredibly impressive at closing space. That like even like a lot of times when especially Dembele, he broke through and he got past his man, even in situations where he got past his man and there was a lot of space, they just closed everything down so that he could not pass to anybody. He could not cross that ball anywhere where an attacker could get to it, because they defended that space so well, which was frustrating.
Yeah, to that point, I want to add that I thought Ndike, I know he got the two yellows, but I thought Ndike was really good for Frankfurt in this match. Yeah. I thought Sebastian Rode and Jokic on Busquets. Busquets only touched the ball 35 times in that first half even. And Kostic on the left side again, I was you know, the man of the match. He got the PK. He also got the third goal. Kocic was awesome, and Rota was really good, and Ndike. So, yeah, again, it's fair for us to give credit to Eintracht Frankfurt players. I mean, Rafael Borre was this future star when he was, what was it, the U-20 World Cup with Colombia? That's when Atletico Madrid first signed him. This was going to be a prodigy. And Kostic as well has been around for a little bit of time and has had to kind of cut his teeth and try to say that Eintracht Frankfurt... I mean, this is also a team that was in the semifinal of the Europa League within the last few seasons. Was it last season or 2019? One of the two. You know, this is a team, the only team in the competition left, even club, that's won the title. Won it was UEFA Cup, what is it, 40 plus years ago? But it doesn't matter. I think when clubs know they won a trophy, they kind of go into it that extra bit of belief. It's why Barcelona has such a dominant mental edge in the Copa del Rey. That's their cup. That's their trophy to win every year. And they go in
Didn't they win it a couple of seasons ago?
Eintracht Frankfurt? No, I think they made the final or the semifinal. And then they also made the DFB Pokal a few seasons ago as well. Or they won that trophy. Either way, I don't know the Eintracht Frankfurt history. That's not what I'm here to do. But I'm just telling you, this is not like, even if they're seventh in the Bundesliga, and just like Villarreal, who's, what, 11th in the Liga, like Europe proves something different. Europe is just 90 minutes where it's about the guys on the pitch and they just have to believe in themselves. And Eintracht Frankfurt, you know, it's what I learned in kindergarten. You know, I believe in myself. Excellence starts with me. And, you know, and that's what Eintracht Frankfurt, they came with a plan for 180 minutes, both at home and on the road, and they executed. So again, I want to give credit to them.
Yeah, you have to give credit to them. Well, I mean, again, it is such a difficult game to judge if you're not in the stadium, because that changed everything. Like it changed it from the start, and it also just changed it at a lot of different moments during the game, and you felt it. Like and you heard how loud they were.
Yeah.
Like on TV, we heard how like everybody was super impressed last week about the atmosphere in Frankfurt when we played them away. Like for 90 minutes, that was just a huge lion roar. And it was more of the same this time. So, you know, when you have, for example, you're trying to get momentum going, we're on the ball and you have 30,000 or 20,000 or 25,000, however many there were, whistling at our players.
There's a lot.
In our own stadium. Like, you know, it's just insane.
What do you think the club can do about it? I mean, like, it's interesting this week, the same news that they've opened up, I mean, it costs a ton, but they've opened up club membership a little bit farther to internationals, which, again, is interesting. You don't really get anything for it other than
becoming... That doesn't change anything, club, but, you know?
Well, no. Yeah, exactly. Well, that doesn't change anything, but it's interesting that, right, that always that argument between you don't want to give too much pull because, again, what's stopping someone who's international from doing the same thing that Socio is doing at the stadium, right? Like, if you, as long as you have a seat in the stadium and have bought into that seat, what's stopping you from selling that seat? The only thing that they could really do is require attendance, right? Like, you have to, the previous season, to renew your seat, you have to have, you physically have to have been in attendance at what, 55% of matches?
Yeah.
Like so that would be the only way, right?
That is easy. Like, I agree with opening up the membership for people outside of Catalonia. That is not a problem, whatever, whatsoever. However, if you want to go to the matches,
personally, I'm flattered. Thank you.
but if you want to go to the matches, if you want a season ticket, then guess what? You need to go to the Barcelona office, which is right at the Camp Nou, and pick up your season ticket yourself. Like, you know, don't send season tickets anywhere outside of a 2.5 hour radius of the stadium, right? So, you know, you want it, come and get it. That's easy. But also, like, here's like, everybody's blaming Socios for selling their tickets. I don't know if that is what happened. Socios don't go to games. So that means that right off the bat, there are 40, 50,000 tickets up for grabs. Now, if Eintracht Frankfurt fans come to Barcelona and buy those tickets in mass, first a lot of them bought them on the internet, then a lot of them bought them here. The club got wind of it like 2 days ago and they're like, oh, snap. And they doubled the prices and they stopped selling tickets online. They cannot all of a sudden, 2 days in front of the game, say, well, you know, you can only come to the stadium with your ticket if you show that you're the one who bought it, and if you show your passport or some kind of ID.
Yeah, I mean, you can also price out Barca fans as well as trying to price out Eintracht Frankfurt fans. Like, it's there's no difference in who you priced out. You might have priced out anybody.
Yeah. So, you know, can the club do something about it? It's very difficult.
Yeah, I mean, if anything,
right, somebody told me on Twitter that they went to the Barcelona Galatasaray or the Galatasaray Barcelona game, and when they arrived to the stadium, the security people made them throw out their Barca jerseys. You know, that's something we could do.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, you don't come in without a Barca jersey.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't say that I've been to like a ton of matches, but I can tell you that like in the same weekend, I went to a match in both Barcelona at the Camp Nou, and then I also went to a match in Stuttgart against, it was Bayer Leverkusen, so not even like a sheer rivalry game. And just the difference between a Bundesliga night and La Liga afternoon is like, it is literally night and day. Like, yeah, for those who have never experienced those two things, like, again, for me, it just happened to be, again, it was a 20 degree, I mean, this is me using Fahrenheit here, but it was, you know, a very cold German night. And it was, again, a very beautiful, beautiful Barcelona afternoon with like kids against Celta de Vigo. And again, it was night and day. I mean, and I also went 2 months after in 2017, the independence referendum. So like there were riot police there, and there was an edge to those matches that I went to. Again, it was less than 2 months, and there was a fever. There was something in the air. You could feel like there was a tension, and yet there was zero tension for the match, zero tension for anyone wearing a Celta de Vigo jersey. Like, it was totally relaxed, totally fine, other than like, you know, the hint of the tension, the political tension that was going on in the background, because that really is, you know, at the core of Barcelona as a club, so much of the tension is about that Catalonia and the rest of Spain tension. More it is around, you know, a German or another international, because Catalonia has become such a globalist city. And I think that does kind of paint what it is. I mean, Stuttgart, having been there, you know, no offense to anyone in Stuttgart, but not a honeymoon destination, a mistake that 5 years on, I continue to say and apologize to my wife about. Stuttgart is not a honeymoon destination.
Wait. You took your wife to Germany for your honeymoon?
We should have gone to Munich. I've been accountable many, many times.
You should have gone to southern Germany.
And we should have. Listen.
Are you sure that you have learned your lesson, Dan?
This is, I've apologized over 300 we did it at like show what, the 70 or whatever, but anyway, whatever episode, I apologize for the first time, I continue to apologize. But anyway, while Stuttgart isn't a honeymoon destination, it certainly, again, was pretty hostile. So for me, I was glad that I wasn't wearing any Leverkusen, or at the time Julian Brandt was their star player. I'm happy that I didn't applaud for Julian Brandt, even though he was great in that match, or anything like that, just because of like what that meant for you. I mean, that just how uncomfortable it is for away supporters. And I'm not telling Kool-Aid's to do that, or I'm not saying that Barcelona should be any different than it is, but I do think that the globalism that affects Catalonia and affects just the city of Barcelona, for everything good about Barcelona, that's the bad thing you get at the stadium. It's not hostile at all. Like, my wife and I, it was hostile to us because we weren't German at Stuttgart Bayer Leverkusen. Like, we weren't Leverkusen fans or anything. Like, we were wearing, I think I had like a Stuttgart pin or something that I had found, but yet we were still being pushed around, and you know what I mean, on the subway, and like it was just something. It was just something different. And you're right,
yeah,
it's not the same thing in Barcelona. But I don't know if I'd want it to be. But it also creates problems like this.
Where are you taking her for your 10th anniversary? Eastern Siberia?
I think we're going to extend. We're going to get rid of the German part of it, and we're going to extend the Barcelona part of it, and maybe just do the, you know, 10 days, whatever it is. And Barcelona is definitely part of the answer, but any other parts of it is going to be nice weather, definitely nice weather, no rain, no cold, you know, anything like that. Again, no disrespect to Germany, but...
Take her to Italy or to Paris, like, you know, make it up to her.
Yeah. So I got a few more years to plan that, 5 more years to figure that out. But yes, I've learned my lesson. No offense to Stuttgart, but we'll not be returning. But yes, but big picture wise, again, as we're going to continue, just kind of move past this match, because I agree with you that as much as I want to break down the X and O's, other than saying why was Vicata there, why actually we answer that question, we know why he was there, discuss the near misses, you know, talk about the fight late on in the last 10 minutes, that belief that really existed and kind of could have turned it, but again, a little bit too late. But big picture wise, I think this team... You know, I think in the past, on a European night like this, whether, yeah, Bayern Munich was, I think, obviously the low point, but even Roma, even all those things. The next Liga match, I was a little bit afraid, like, has this team completely gone off the rails? Have they lost the point? Have they lost the plot for the season? What's going to happen? Instead, this is just me being optimistic, my belief in Xavi. I think that they could go out against Cadiz and blow them off the pitch 8-0, right? Like, we can expect some kind of response from this team that I don't think existed before, and that's why I'm going to continue to be positive for the rest of this season.
I just hope there's not going to be 25,000 Cadiz fans in the stadium on Monday.
I mean, are there 35,000 total Cadiz fans like that exist? No offense to Cadiz again. I'm throwing shade here, but yeah, I don't think you're going to see the same thing there. But I mean, Real Betis, right? I think Real Betis is at home. So you might have.
No, Betis is away.
What, Betis is away? Or is it?
Yeah, we lost the one at home.
Right. And then Real Sociedad's away as well. So, yeah. Okay. So yeah, any supporter groups with more than 25,000 people will probably not be a problem because they're on the road.
Yeah. I mean, wow. Honestly, that is the only story about this match. Mm-hmm. What happened off the pitch impacted us so much more than whatever happened on it. Insane. I think, first of all, like you asked how to solve it. They need to look at the people who have season tickets and don't go to the games. If you have a season ticket and you do not go to the game, you should not have a season ticket.
And that's all tracked with scan, right? Like the minute you scan in.
I have somebody else's season ticket. That person is not making any money off of me, you know. But that person says, "Well, you know, you pay what it costs mm-hmm. for that season ticket, and I go to the games." Why would somebody do that? Well, you know, people have children. Those children are going to grow up, and they might want to have their season ticket. Like a lot of season tickets, they're not really tickets. They're a seat. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it's a family heirloom.
Yeah, like right. 100% legacy.
It's part of their family. So some people don't want to give it up, but then they don't want to pay it and not have anybody go to the games. So it is very common for people to go on other people's tickets. Now it might be that, you know, I know somebody who has a season ticket, and sometimes he goes, sometimes his cousin goes, sometimes his brother goes. They kind of share it. They pay it together. It's like their family season ticket. The girl sitting next to me, the season ticket is her uncle's, but she is the one who always goes. Sometimes she cannot, then her sister comes. And it's the same. Like, she pays her uncle for the price of the season ticket. I don't know why the uncle doesn't want to get rid of it. Oh, it's easy why. They want to keep it in the family. However, there are a lot of people with season tickets whose seats stay empty. That is something that the club needs to solve. There's more than 10,000 people on the waiting list. Let people go who are on the waiting list. And you know what? If the people on the waiting list don't go either, then get rid of those season tickets and lower the prices.
Yeah.
For loose tickets. Because I can understand why the regular seats or the loose tickets, why they cost a lot of money. It's because the season tickets are relatively cheap. So they try to balance it out by saying, okay, you know, for our members with a season ticket, let's keep it affordable for them. And let's make up by selling like regular tickets for a higher price for the tourists, for people who go every now and then, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think in theory, not to say there's no excuses, but in theory with the Espai Barça project extending, I mean, it's the biggest stadium in Europe to begin with, and then extending it and creating more seats and more potential for revenue, of course. But like, I mean, I selfishly would want, as an international, somebody who, again, doesn't get to go every few years, like I would get to go, that I would just want access and affordability. Like, those are two things. Like, I just want to make sure when I go to Barcelona, which is a club I've given a lot to, I say that tongue in cheek, but, you know, I would want to be able to go, and I want to be able to afford to be able to go. Like, those are the two things. As long as that threshold is met, you know, not say it doesn't matter to me how, like, which culés get into those seats, but that it doesn't truly matter to me. As long as there are culés in those seats and that stadium is filling up. And again, from where I sit, you know, the more revenue that is generated by this club by filling it with culés, match in and match out, then the more revenue is made for players, the more revenue is made for, again, future investments, for digital investments, for things like that, right? Like, that support the club and just continue to grow Barcelona, not as a brand, but as an actual capitalist enterprise, which is, again, this is like the boring who cares stuff, but it winds up caring. And I mean, it winds up mattering today, because you're right. Yeah. This was the only talking point. So, Levan, I'm going to give you the final word here. I think you're right. There was one thing to talk about here. We somehow extended this to 35 minutes somehow. But
yeah, I kept pivoting back to it. I'm sorry.
No, but I think it's fair to. I think you were right to do that. Because again, I think we could have rehashed this whole Eric Garcia narrative. You know, I not even defended him, but I said, hey, this is what he is this season. He could even make improvements. Like, let's not go crazy about, but five penalties in two matches or three matches, not great, of course. Like, that's a terrible stat. You know, I think
he was not responsible for all those penalties, was he?
No, just two of them. But just two. Yeah. Two penalties in two matches is still like a lot.
But the handball against Levante, you can't blame him for that. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, but that's not how people look at the stats when all said and done. They're still going to, the argument, I'm not arguing against him, but the argument against him is going to be things like that. It's going to be two penalties in two matches. It's going to be their laundry list of issues with Eric Garcia. He's too weak at this point, which he might be. But again, he could bulk up. He still does 21. I mean, he's still figuring out positioning. And his positioning has improved upfield on the counter, but his positioning inside the box has not necessarily improved. But again, he was also playing Nessa Mingatha, so that didn't help a lot. He has also not really played that many times at Araujo, where they were the two in command of that back line, because PK has still only missed four matches this season. So I'm not saying I'm going to defend Eric Garcia, but with everything that you're laying out, there are arguments to be made as to why I'm not worried about Busquets, I'm not worried about Garcia, I'm not worried about Aubameyang, because the rest of the 15-match unbeaten streak says a lot more about those players and this team than this individual match did. And I think it's totally fair for you to... I mean, I think that is the very positive take to take with it.
So here's the thing. I think that right now the challenge is for Xavi to convince them of that.
The team, you mean?
And to make them believe, because I think the team as it is competitive.
Yeah.
Like, even if we make no signings, if we hold on to the players that we have, we are competitive. We can fight for La Liga. We can fight for Europe. Make the quarters or the semis in the Champions League. Sure. Why not?
PK we mentioned, but Ansu, Kessier, and Christensen entirely changed the depth of the last 2 weeks. Entirely. Those three players alone change rotations and depth and just make it a better squad.
I mean, yeah, but also Gavi is going to be 1 year older. Nico is going to be 1 year older. Dest is going to be 1 year older under Xavi. Yeah. Araujo, Eric are going to be 1 year older. Of course.
Is Alba.
Jordi Alba and Busquets are also going to be one year
so
older, right?
And so will PK and so will Aubameyang, yep.
I think a lot of people point at a match like this where we get hit on the counter a lot and say, oh, you see that Busquets is too slow and he cannot deal with it. It doesn't really matter if you have Busquets or N'Golo Kante on the pitch, on these counters. You know, that they play in so much space that causes problems regardless. So Xavi needs to stay strong. He needs to keep his team positive, our team positive. We need to hold our head up high and bounce back from this. Visca el Barça.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. So there it is. Follow Barcelev, follow Levan on Twitter, down in the show notes below. I'm on Twitter too, and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, at HiltonD13 for me, and then close Facebook group, the Barcelona Podcast, Patreon's how we keep making these shows, and on YouTube with those match reviews. If you want to be more negative, I'm a little more negative over there, sure. YouTube at the Barcelona Podcast, and we've also revised the website, and there's still, as I mentioned, new things coming very, very, very shortly. I keep promising and pushing it off every few days. But anyway, so BarcelBlog.com is the place to find everything involved with what we have going on. But most importantly, thanks so much for listening to the show. For better or worse, wins or losses, cups or not, we're Kool-Aid till we die. So until next time, we'll talk to you soon. And Barça, Barça.
Barça, Barça.